You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
That's right, my listeners. It's back again this season. And this year, I'll be mixing in some very special episodes because we're celebrating the top figures who have defined this incredible league over the past 20 years. Find out right here how these great teams and great players have become the kings of Europe. Stay tuned and download because, as you know, no subject is out of bounds on The Crossover. Welcome back to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas, and I'm here sitting with an ex-player, a coach, and of course already a legend at such a young age, but we're here to try to get to know this guy a little bit better and try to understand exactly where he comes from and how he's translated his life experience on and off the court into a successful career in such a short amount of time. As a player, he's done it all, and we all see and feel that as a coach, it's just a matter of time. Please welcome to The Crossover, Šarūnas Jasikevičius. You know how long it's been for me to get that name right? Did I get it right?
It's not easy. Yeah, you got it right. You got it pretty good. Better than most people.
Coach, how are you, my man?
I'm good. Doing good.
First, I need to thank you, and I got to tell our guests and the listeners that I scheduled you last year for this, and you gave me a hard time like throughout the year, man, to get to nail you down. Then your team goes on a 6-game winning streak at the end, and there's a miraculous comeback, and you come to Madrid with the option to get into the playoffs. And I have to, like, all the work I did for 5 days, I had to pull back and just do a regular interview with you about the game. But you're a man of your word. You told me that day that you were coming back.
Yeah. You know, I said, you know, probably maybe not the right moment to do it then with the last game to win in this great run that we had. So, yeah, you know, no worries to do it now.
But I told you last year, I was the one that called EuroLeague and told them, like, no, I'm not doing this.
All right.
There's no way I'm doing it. Good. I said, as a matter of fact, if I don't do it this year, he's definitely going to come back next year. So all my listeners know that you're a man of your word.
Yeah.
If it hasn't happened yet, I really want to discuss it, how you want to talk about it, whatever it is. When was the moment where you left the player behind and felt like you become, has that moment come yet?
Yes, I mean, for sure it came. I think it just comes with the territory. I think you have to do it at the end. Ultimately, if you want to be successful, you want to do the decisions, you want to do a lot of things that, are best for the team, and you got to leave the player's mentality side behind. And I think, just for the fact is that I want to do as good of a job as possibly I can, you know, I had to leave that. I have to get down to players' level. I have to understand how they think and what kind of thought process is going through their heads, and hopefully in that way they become better people and better players.
How difficult is it to make that switch from taking the sneakers off one day, essentially what you did, and a couple of months later put a suit and tie on and sat on the bench as an assistant at first, which I think was a helpful process, but how difficult is it? Because wasn't there a time where you just felt like, man, I'm better than him?
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, still I played against, a lot of the players in the EuroLeague, and a little bit of it's my advantage. You know, I know how they think. I know how they do. I know their strong hands. I know their strong spots. But every year it's less and less of those, guys. And like I said, I want to do as good of a job as possibly I can. So you have to put all that aside. You know, the playing career is over. I very rarely talk to my team about my playing experiences. Right. Very rarely. Probably.
You're not one of those coaches when I played.
No.
When I played, I did this.
Because I hated when coaches used to do that. Right. So once in a while I do it, but not like something like to praise myself, just more like to give an example or something that hopefully can help them. Yeah, so I left it. I left it pretty quick, I think.
I think most people know the answer to this question, but I want to get your perspective on it. Why do point guards always make the better coaches? And I don't talk bad about big men, because I'm right here. We're a little far away. I can't hit you, but why do point guards always make the better coaches?
Well, I think you still, if you want to be a good coach, I think you have to think about not about one thing or one position. I think you have to think about all five and plus, the traveling, the media and so on. And I think very few players while they're playing, they really think about other guys.
Right.
I think they think about themselves. Oh, now I'm having this. You know, the coach is doing good this with me. The coach is not doing this with me. And, you know, I wish the coach would be like that. So you're constantly thinking about yourself. And as a player, you know, as point guard, you were always thinking about five. Are they in the right spots? The coach was always telling you, your job is to put people in the right spot. Your job is to think about five at that point. And sometimes you think about 12
if you
really care about the whole. You know, you think about how they feel off the court and so on. So if you thought about it a little bit as a player, I think it would make your transition into the coach a lot easier. The fact is that you're thinking about the situation as a whole. When every player goes home and he thinks, you know, oh, I had a bad game. Oh, I had a great game and we still lost. So, you know, the heck with it. No.
That might be the best answer I've heard to that question so far.
Yeah.
That point guard does have to think about getting everybody involved.
Exactly. You know, and not only that. And sometimes it's off the court. You have to think about this player is down. Maybe you have to, you know, I get him an extra invite into the dinner or the bar we're going to go to next, you know, just simply from the fact is that he's struggling. Come on, let's come out today.
The bar thing sounds like it comes straight from a Yugoslavian coach. I know a Serbian coach.
Well, no.
Named Selko.
I think a lot of people, they do it, you know. And like I said, it's all about, for us coaches, I believe it's all about thinking the situation as a whole. And every player is very important. Every player is just a piece of the puzzle.
I think it's amazing because when I quit playing, I felt like it took me so long to get that player's mentality out of me that the game had already moved on. You know, because the game's moved on even since you started playing. You started playing just about when I retired.
Yeah.
And the game's moved on a lot since then. So what is that process? Is it just a mental thing? Do you just say yourself like, okay, well, now I'm a coach? Or was there, I just feel like there has to be some sort of process there.
Yeah, for me, it was like this, you know. For me, it was I was thrown into the fire. I mean, I became assistant, but at the same time, my head coach was for 1 month and a half with the national team every preparation. So I immediately ran the preparation. So I had no time to think. Yeah, there was tough moments, you know, you don't think exactly for that period of time what drill to do or what to say or throw out. And it was not easy. But like I said, you know, they throw you into the fire, you come out, you're fine.
We just watched Vasilis Spanoulis become the number one scorer in all-time EuroLeague. You play with him and you've played against him, obviously. What makes him so special? I mean, obviously this interview isn't about him, but I'm going to get to something else.
Yeah.
I want to know what makes him so special as a player.
I think Billy is one of the most competitive people and one of the hardest working people. But when I say that, you know, everybody say that, oh, he's such a hard worker. No. You don't understand what hard working is because, you know, you haven't seen some of these guys really work hard. You know, they're in the gym all the time. I mean, I'm talking about if you're doing shooting drills, you know, individual work, everything is 100%, but really 100%, game speed, you know. It's always a big difference. Everybody's talking playing hard, everybody's talking hard workers, but not many people really understand what this means.
Right.
No, this means 100% every single day. And I'm sure, you know, it's very difficult to get to that 100% level, but he's about as close as you could get. I mean, think about it. Not great size, you know, became much better shooter over the years.
If you look at him, he doesn't look like a player.
He doesn't look like a big-time player he is. But, you know, he's so competitive. You know, he's a son of what, you know, like on the court, you know.
Don't worry about it.
He competes, you know. He competes at every time. He will literally cut your throat off to get that win. And when I was preparing for him, I was always, you know, telling my guards about him. I said, listen, I mean, first of all, it's not about basketball. First of all, he's going to tell you something. He's going to do you something. He's going to give you a look. If you don't respond immediately,
I love him.
You already lost half of the battle.
Right.
So I said, you respect him because, you know, he's respect worthy. But if you just take one step back, he's going to, you know. And, you know, this competition level that with a new player sometimes is a little bit different.
Here comes my next question.
Yeah.
Here comes my next question. You're leading me right into it. That's called, in our business, that's called a segue, you know.
Yeah.
The reason why I'm asking this is because you left the game in 2014, what, 5-6 years ago?
Yeah.
We watched Juan Carlos, I put quotes in it, somewhat walk away from the game. I don't think he was ready to walk away from the game,
exactly.
But he walked away from the game. And now we see Spanoulis in his last few years. He's still playing well at times, but, you know, basically what I'm trying to say is Father Time is undefeated. We know that. There's no doubt. Some people, it takes Father Time a little bit longer to knock out than others. But as you were about to say, I miss players like you. And I'm not saying that there's not good players in the early, there's great players, there's no doubt. But I miss players like you. I miss players like Spanoulis. Not so much I miss him now, but I miss him in his prime. And I miss La Bamba, you know what I mean? Yeah. I miss Juan Carlos Navarrete. Because you guys were just killers. You had that personality that just give me the damn ball and let me finish this. Has the game changed in that aspect?
No, I don't believe so. You know, I mean, I hate the fact that a lot of times we're talking about young generation is softer or something like this. No, they all the same, you know. The adjustments have to be made towards them a little bit because, you know, technology is different, surroundings is different, so much social media.
But shouldn't that make it better?
Well, I think it's still, ultimately, the values will still the same, you know, stay the same. I mean, you got to come in and you got to work. I mean, there is no secret. If you want to be better than the next person, you got to work more than the next person. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people think that they're really doing that. And when you point them out, you know, what you're really doing, you know, and... You know, hopefully the best way is not what you say is your opinion. Hopefully the best way is the video and whatever they cannot argue with.
Right.
You know, and that's when they understand they're not there yet.
You seem to keep going back to that point that people don't really realize what hard work is.
No, they don't. They don't. I think the percentages are probably still the same. I mean, the percentages of these really competitive guys, I mean, not everybody's going to be very competitive. And, you know, it's just...
But now when you're good, you're really good.
Yeah.
You know, you're the Luka Doncic, LeBron. You know what I mean? When you're just that good, you're really good. But I think, to me, it's like the go-to guy has been taken away because the game has changed as far as rotations are concerned and the amount of games and everything else. And do you feel like at this point of your life right now, if you went back and played, I think one year you played 33 minutes a game.
Yeah.
You feel like you could still do that in today's game?
Yeah.
With all the game?
Yeah.
That's
no question.
Wouldn't you rather do that than be rotated off? You don't look like the kind of guy that like to go on
well,
and off.
Well, I mean,
bench.
But, you know, we have to, understand that there are more games right now. You know, the schedule is crazy. The schedule is more hectic, and you have to sometimes just take a step back, you know, and... I mean, but, you know, at the same time, we all want to play in the big games, mainly, you know. So whenever you play a little bit game that you can take a little bit and easy, you know, maybe you don't want to be there 33 minutes. And if you think about the team as a whole, if you're one of those people who have leadership skills, I believe it's probably nice for you to sit out and play one game 15, 20 minutes just to help out your teammate. And the fact is that you want your teammate to get confidence and get better and so on and so on.
For a quick moment, let's move away from the court. It seems like family is like the most important thing to you.
I mean, you know, I think there's need to be balance. I mean, we grew up playing basketball since we were six. Now you're telling me, you know, at the 37, whatever I had to 35 when I started having kids, that you can take away basketball from me. It's not possible. But for this reason, you need, you know, a smart wife. You need the support system around you. You need to be smart. And the fact is to understand that, you know, at the same time, it's very simple. Where does, you know, our income is coming from? You know, everybody wants a good family life, but, you know, then there's some sacrifices to be made for that. And, in my case, I'm lucky that, for example, at home, I have the support system that is phenomenal. You know, my wife understands perfectly me as a player, and I think she understands it's even worse now as a coach. You
right,
know,
of course.
Time-wise, it's more consuming. Well,
ultimately, women make the ultimate sacrifice.
Yes,
I mean, you're working, you're out every day, your wife's at home taking care of the kids and making sure everything's good at home.
Following you all over the place, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it's not easy, but that's where the support system is very important. It's still a team.
I might sound like a little bit of a psychiatrist here, but tell me a little bit about your childhood, your mom and dad. It seemed like they were really important, obviously important, as most parents are to players. But
yeah, they were both athletes, you know.
Right.
So this is why, for me, sports came naturally. And like I said, you know, I was always taught to be, you know, tougher, not to give up, not to use too many excuses. Even though my parents kind of went away from the home at 17, years old, and you know, went to States and so on, and they were, you know, kind of not present, but you sort of hear the stories about how they were as athletes and so on, and they were extremely tough-minded athletes. So I think it kind of came a little bit natural for me.
It was a little bit more of a Russian mentality than back then, because that's what you were living in.
Yeah, no, but you know, at the same time, I'm already the child of from 16. I'm already one of those that had seen both of the worlds.
Both sides,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. So I grew up as a communist kid, and you know, and I started already playing, let's say, 16 and under and something like this as an independent Lithuanian. So the fact is that I saw both sides was really interesting, just the way it worked and so on, and the changes we're, you know, making our country.
The story about your mom, Rita, her name is, right?
Yeah.
She was a handball player for Russia,
yeah,
for USSR, and she was pregnant. She unexpectedly got pregnant with,
yeah,
you, and she gave up her ability to, or her opportunity, I guess, to play on a Soviet national team that went on to win the gold.
Yeah.
And then she was pretty much, so to speak, taken out of, I mean,
cut off, yeah,
blackballed from,
yeah,
from the USSR. This is what I think is your best moment as a coach, to me. Remember the interview about Augusta Lima?
Yeah, yeah.
Talk to me about that, man, because to me that was, man, first of all, I'm going to let you know that I cried. I watched it the other day one more time, and I still cry, and I have to read it because you're talking to Lithuanian.
Yeah, yeah.
And I still tear up every time I hear it. It's the first time I've ever heard a coach distinguish between sport and life. And that's something that's not common, especially here in Europe. What was that? I mean, the look on your face, look, you want to kill this guy, first
no,
of all.
No, nothing, yeah. I was, you know, I was not happy about the question. You know, first of all, I think it was kind of like no-brainer for me. So I never really thought about sending any kind of message more than try to explain to this guy that, hey, listen, man, it's not a big deal if he goes and see, because, you know, you don't want to miss the birth of your child. I mean, I know for myself, you know, I was, there's no way I was going to miss it.
Right. You have two kids.
Yeah, I have two kids. So
Isla and Lucas.
Isla and Lucas, yeah.
And you saw both of them be born.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was there with wife, you know, inside, and there's no way I was going to miss it. You know, she wanted me there, and I wanted to be there too. It's, you know, this incredible moment when they come in life, you know. So for Augusto to experience that, it was sort of like no-brainer, and I was not trying to send any kind of message. I was just trying to listen, man, what are you talking about right now? What is this?
My favorite part of the interview was when he said, Augusta left the team.
Yeah,
you just looked,
so
he's like, no, I let him go.
I let him go. He asked me. You know,
but to like the most, the mentality is like, you can't let him go. It's a playoff.
Yeah, well, why not? You know, I mean, look, I mean, I could be put in a difficult situation sometimes, and maybe it will be EuroLeague Final Four and somebody will want to go one day.
True.
But, you know, this was a little,
you're not going to let him in, are you?
I don't know. I don't know what my answer would be. But I think for him, probably the birth of his child will be more important than EuroLeague Final Four. So, in a way,
Maybe not so much today.
He has to go, in a way, you know.
But in the future,
yeah,
you never want to know that you missed something because you had to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know. I thought what you did was, that was your best. Hopefully you'll have a lot more better,
yeah,
moments as a coach. You've already had a few good ones. But
no, you know, I never expected it will have this type of, you know, impact. But, you know, it was just sort of like, come on, man. Just like, it was more about like me being pissed off with a journalist,
right,
than being about sending a message. You know?
I don't even know what you guys did that game. I don't know if you won or lost.
We won.
You won that, and you're
still,
and you
pretty
still,
comfortably. Yeah. Yeah.
And you still went at the guy like you're upset. That's great. When did you realize as a kid, or as a young adult, I would assume, that the ultimate sacrifice that your mom made to give up her opportunity to
play? I didn't understand. You were not allowed to talk about that. I found out that like much later in life, like, you know.
So there was no talk about it at all?
No, she was, you know, in communist world, you cannot really have too much of opinions, you
right
know. And she was throwing it out there once in a while, you know, she was throwing it out there, oh, you know, this Olympics, I had a chance, but you know, you are more important. I'm like, okay, I don't understand what she's talking
right,
about
right,
here,
right.
You know, you know, I remember probably her start talking about this like probably once or twice a year, like from when I was 10, 11. And yeah, and you know, you don't understand that
right,
at that age.
That's what she's trying to tell you. I want to know exactly when you look back, like, holy shit, my mom did something that.
No, like already in adult life, you know, probably 22, 23 and under, when we were like a really free country and, you know, you're allowed. But my mom doesn't talk about it a lot. You know, doesn't really talk about it a lot, I think.
Your dad also taught you I read the stories about you guys sitting around cheering for the Russian team and the Russian national team. And he wasn't as much of an athlete, from what I understood, as your mom was. Didn't get as far, but he was still an important part of what you developed into because of his passion for basketball or for sports in general.
For sports, yeah.
But you grew up in a different Lithuania, as we were talking about. It wasn't the Lithuania. When was it? In 91 that everything changed?
91.
What was it like as a kid growing up under the Russian regime, I guess?
I guess, you know, you never even, for me, it doesn't exist Russian regime or Lithuanian regime as a kid. You don't understand any of
these
things.
You don't get it, right?
You don't get it. You know, you don't get it, the fact that is like, even at home, like, they were not speaking a lot at the fact that we used to be independent country and so on. Once in a while, dad would throw out, and I wouldn't even understand what's going on. I remember, you know, some later, I understand. And when we became independent, you know, we were at home in the house and we were watching the news and the parliament declares independency. And I'm like, dad, so what does this mean now? I don't know. That says, you know, boy, it's going to be a big fight. Nobody will let us leave. You know, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. He said, it's going to be a mess now.
So he was a little bit terrified, a little scared.
Yes. Well, you know, it was sort of like uncertainty, you know, what's going on. And I remember watching the news at home that evening that, you know, we used to sit around and watch the news. It was not 500 channels like it is now.
Right, of course, yeah.
You know, you know, we talk about, okay, news from inside the country, and they're going on about what's going on in Lithuania. And they said, news from abroad in Moscow. Whoa.
News from abroad.
Yeah, news from abroad. You know, immediately the news, like, started going, news from abroad. I'm like, what
is that?
Moscow
mean?
Was our capital, like, you know.
Of course, yeah.
Of the USSR, like, for as long as I remember, for as long as I've been born. And now news from abroad.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, and they said, you know, news from Moscow, news from Berlin, you know, news from New York. And I'm like, okay, so Moscow is the same level as New York and Berlin. You know, it's abroad. Finish. Right.
So that made it a reality almost.
Yeah.
Is it true you wanted to give up basketball and play tennis?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I was a dumb kid about ninth grade, you know.
Aren't we all?
You know, the problem is that I was always grow up playing with the kids 1 year older than me. And so I could never really, you know, 1 year is big deal growing up when you're young. So I could never, like, be really good. I mean, they always told me I was talented. But I don't know. I was just kind of a little bit late bloomer also.
So you're getting beat up a little bit.
I was getting beat up, yes. Yeah. I was a little bit on the lazy side probably until 15
really?
Or 16. Yeah, until 15 or 16, they told me, you know, this guy is just too happy to be in practices and not, you know, would be maximum. But then with this also, this Lithuania thing changed quite a bit, you know, because you could see the opportunities. You're going to play for your country. You're going to travel abroad. And everything kind of hit it, you know, just in the right spot.
It seems to me like, no matter what you would have chosen to do, especially if it was a sport, you would have been successful anyways. I mean, is that what you feel like?
I mean, you know, as a basketball player, I never had very good lateral movement, so in tennis, that would not work out pretty good.
You mean you can't get from sideline to sideline?
Exactly. You know, I mean, they would hit balls past me left and right.
But poor lateral movement means you weren't a good defender. Is that what you're trying to say to me?
Yes, exactly.
So you had that same sickness as I had.
Yes. It's called the stiff hips.
I should have used that back in the day. How does a kid from this Russian rule in the beginning, then to Lithuania, end up in Pennsylvania playing it's like Amish country.
It is Amish country.
Yeah.
It is Amish country. It's the first time I see the buggies and everything to Coryville, to Lancaster County. No, I think it was a coach then that was trying to help us out with all the exchange programs and so on. And Lithuania was, at this moment, Lithuania was in bad shape. I mean, you know, you have to find your own now. Food and everything, when before it was everything divided by the 15 republics and everything was so easy. Now
you're kind of cut off.
Cut off, yeah, and you have to, you know, jumpstart your own life. And the first couple years was obviously very difficult. Yeah, so it was not a good moment. And, you know, at that time, we were kind of like this United States is where the best is. This is where the best. Course, we got to go, you know, college basketball, you know, whoa, so many people and everything.
And I know because of my last name, even though I don't come from Lithuania, yeah. but I have a Lithuanian last name. There's a whole bunch of Lithuanians in the Northeast and up yeah. in Canada. Did you like hook up with a family? Did your parents
yes,
live with you
exactly.
over there?
Exactly. No. With
you had a Lithuanian
family. I was
family
in exchange
though.
Program. No. American family.
American family.
The Harolds. Still in touch with them, incredible
really?
People. Yeah, no, our families became, you know, close. Like they went to the States, my parents to visit them probably a couple times. They've been coming last year in the playoffs. My American father came to visit.
You call him your American father?
Yeah, that's what I call
that's
him,
great.
American father.
That's
I mean,
great.
But he is like my buddy. You know, we golf together, make fun of each other, talk trash all the time.
When are we gonna golf together?
Ah, here you go. Yeah.
I don't know if I want to go to Scotland and golf with you, but we can go to Greece or somewhere.
Not many golf courses in Greece.
I got connections down there in Costa Navarino, don't worry.
No, Marino is great.
How many years did you play high school there?
One.
Just one. Then you went to Maryland.
Yeah.
That's pretty damn good. And with 1 year of high school ball, you go to an ACC school.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they saw some kind of talent in me, I guess. But, you know, ending up in ACC was at that point still, you know, it was different ACC a little bit now, you know, Maryland.
Yeah, already, Big East was
yes.
kind of going down and
yes,
ACC was coming
was
up.
Coming up, exactly.
But you still had North Carolina, Duke,
yeah.
Virginia Tech, all those.
Virginia Tech was not there yet, but Virginia. Virginia was not as good as they are now.
One of your favorite players is a guy that I had the honor and yeah. luck to play with is Arvydas Sabonis.
Yeah.
What's a point guard doing looking up to Arvydas Sabonis at what, 220? You're 193?
Yeah, that's my point. But, you know, he was a hero for us back then, you know, and so on. And at the same time, I always tell my guys right now, you know, you cannot imagine what pressure is for a point guard to play with Sabas, you know, because you know, especially as a young point guard, you know, like me, who had no idea about the game at you know, 21, 20.
Did you play with him anywhere else
yeah.
other than the national team?
National team.
Just
no,
the
just national team a couple times, yeah. I mean, if you don't deliver that ball at the right moment, I mean, he's opening his mouth and it's going off of you, you know. Like,
are you blind?
Are you blind? I'm wide open. Give the ball.
I've seen him like cut across the lane in practice, and if the ball gets there a step late, like where he can't get that little hook shot
yeah.
off, he'll just punch the ball into like the 10th row and like get mad. I'm just like, I like Sabas, man. I'm like, just grab it and do something
yeah.
else. Because you have to buy your mud. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, give me the ball where I want it.
Exactly. Like 5 seconds late all the time, you. 5 seconds late. I'm like, wait, I'm just a kid.
So this is like one of your idols when you're growing up, and you can play with him, and he's yelling at you. What's
yeah,
that
no,
feel like?
No, it's amazing. You know, it was everything I ever wanted to do is to play. You know, with Sabonis, with Kurtinaitis. Now to think about it, that you know they are my boys. It's absolutely crazy. I mean, we're texting all the time. We're joking all the time. You know, we're having parties sometimes when we see them. So you know, but.
Those will always
be my idols. Yeah.
Those were a couple of my best years with him and Kurti, man. With
exactly.
Sabas and Kurti.
I can only imagine the three of you.
Yeah, we had a good time. We definitely had a good time. Petrovic was your real idol, though.
Yeah.
I read that you watch videos of him over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You try to emulate his game. And you do have a little bit of that
yeah.
game with the stop, pop, and drop
yeah.
type thing and the way and your personality. But it's easy. Like, Dr. J was my idol when I was growing up. And it's easy to try to emulate movements, jump shots, things like that, but it seemed like you took on his personality also. Is that, I mean, he doesn't have a great reputation,
yeah.
you know, from either his teammates or other
yeah.
players, but, you know, he's the guy you always want on your team no matter
yeah.
what. Were you able to consciously focus on that, emulate his attitude on the court?
No, but I understood that that I'm, you know, ultimately I'm going to be the guy who will do whatever it takes to win. You know,
but where'd that come from?
Fights. I don't know. I guess you have to have it inside.
It's just something inbred.
But, you know, I mean, I saw how he was acting, you know, how he demanded the ball and so on. And, you know, I'm not the sensitive kind of guy. I mean, I am sensitive a little bit off the court and stuff like this.
You're not sensitive. Yeah, but come on. Oh. We all saw you cry on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, I do cry very easy. But I'm saying on the court, you know, I'm not so sensitive. Like, I mean, like, as far as, like, we can talk it out about everything. We can yell at each other as right. long as it's all for the big goal.
Yeah, you got to have that objective.
You exactly. know? You have that objective, and it's whatever it takes, my opinion, you know.
You played well, and you didn't play the first couple of years in college, and you played well the last couple of years. Yeah. Were you expected to get drafted?
Not really.
No,
not
you were.
Really. Not really.
Was it a dream at one point?
Yes, it was. At that point, you know, I was extremely Americanized.
Right.
You know, extremely Americanized, and at the young age, you know, it's not that difficult to change your whole perspective, because as a person, you're still not very settled in general.
Yeah.
So like...
you don't really have a home at this point,
exactly.
so to speak.
Yeah. You say you spend 10 months in States and you go to Lithuania for 2 months, then sometimes right. you don't even go there because you go to summer school.
Right, exactly.
So...
You were one of those guys like me, I had to go to summer school to play the following year.
Yeah.
What?
No, but I didn't do that. Yeah, but all the kids that they go from Lithuania, they at some point they become Americanized, you know.
Right.
You think like you might even stay in States your whole life and everything. But as far as NBA, I honestly was not sure of myself that much. I mean, I thought I was not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Explain to me one thing. I'm going to read this off here that I have it written. Now, you start playing pro in 1998.
Yeah.
You went on, well, I want to say 12 different teams, but it's really 9 because you repeated in Rites, you repeated in Panathinaikos and Barcelona. You went to the NBA, you came back to Europe, and it wasn't until 2013, which is 15 years later, that you ended up playing for the club that you actually always wanted to play
for. Yeah, it was my first love. You know?
Why?
Well, because...
Even when you went to the enemy, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, at the beginning, the enemy was not the enemy. It was not big enough to be
the enemy. It was just one more.
It was just, you know, starting with a club. And they had a spot in Europe, and I thought it was close to home, and it was right. At that point, you could only register in EuroLeague game, I believe, 10 players. So most of time, I would not even be registered in Žalgiris.
Okay.
So the coach that we actually won junior championship with, Kozlauskas, he thought that I was not ready. Okay, you know, thought I was not ready. I'll go try to play European Cup, and it was already good, you know,
right.
be seen around Europe and play Lithuanian League and actually have huge responsibility in a smaller team. So in that way, it worked out. But if he would have told me I would have played, I would have. Also, Žalgiris was not what it was now. I mean, they were really like up and down. Then all of a sudden, with the ownership of Kalmanovic, they really became
right.
big. They got great management. Then, you know, he took off, and then it was...
Your first year in Rites, they how much did it hurt you to watch them win? They won the championship.
Exactly. And, you know, and I had an offer from Žalgiris. But to tell you the truth, I was always with them. After EuroLeague games, I was watching in Kaunas.
Right.
We would go out with the whole... I was always with the Žalgiris team.
You're with the players.
Yeah, we were with the players all the time and their wives. And, you know, Darius Maskoliūnas was one of my close friends. Uh-huh. And now he's my assistant here. You know, he was the captain.
Right.
So we were close. And so I was going to the games. I even had season tickets, I believe, for Žalgiris games.
So you would play your games and then go watch Žalgiris play?
Yeah. Yeah. And I would go to, you know, old Sporto Hale, you know, and watch. And yes, I even celebrate. I remember the championship that they beat us.
With
Žalgiris.
Yeah.
They beat us 3-0. I went to celebrate in Kaunas, and I remember I had then American girlfriend. Next morning, I took off for States immediately.
So they beat you 3-0 in the finals, and you went to celebrate with them.
Exactly. So you know that I'm a Žalgiris boy.
Come on, I can't believe that. That's crazy. Now, before you got there and finally played, you had quite a ride, and this is our 20th anniversary edition, so we're going to talk a little bit about the Final Fours. I want to touch, because there's been so many of them for you,
yeah.
I want to touch a little bit on each one. The first one's in Barcelona. You're essentially Mr. EuroLeague at this point. I mean, you know, now you're coaching and everything, but all the accolades that you've had, it's just something, it's impossible. I tried to write them down. I'm like, I forget it. It's just like too many things. You've done everything. The awards, the titles, the MVPs, individual awards, blah, 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 so on and so on. Is there any one thing that haunts you to this day before we get into the Final Fours that you don't have or that you didn't win?
No, the thing that haunts us all is the semifinal in 2004 in Athens Olympic Games. I mean, you know, we lost to
right.
Yeah, we lost to Italy. No, we lost to Italy, actually, then, semifinal.
What was the USA one? What year was that?
2000 in Sydney.
Ah, okay, yeah.
But then we beat them, and then we lost in 2004 for the bronze. But this we were going to go play Argentina in the finals if we beat Italy.
Right.
So it was really a golden opportunity for us to win the gold in Olympics. And, you know, we came against Italian team who... We were better team for sure, but they had a great day. We made a lot of mistakes. You know, one of those 40 minutes that just haunts you still until this point.
It's amazing. I was listening. I like to listen to a lot of different podcasts other than my own, which I don't hardly ever listen to my own. So, and I was listening to somebody talk about Tom Brady the other day and about retiring. And they said that the hardest thing to walk away from are the great moments and the bad moments.
Yeah.
Because you remember all of them.
Yeah.
And they make you stay no matter what, because the bad moments make you want to get better. The good moments want to make you want to keep getting better.
Exactly.
And that's like the hardest thing. Like, to me, the biggest things that haunt me are the games, the championships that I lost,
yeah,
that I let slip away. But anyways, let's move on to the ones that you won. Barcelona, it's your first one. I'm going to call you out real quick, all right? 1-for-5 from 2 points in two games, 2-for-13 from three in the two games. Not your best Final Four.
No, so nervous. So nervous.
That was my next question.
I didn't sleep a week before. I mean, it was 1 or 2 hours. I mean, it's just like shaking.
Thank God somebody finally tells me this. Because I did the same way. To me, it's like everybody says, oh, no, it's just another game.
Yeah, okay,
no, it's
whatever.
Not.
I mean,
it might be another game once the ball goes up in the air.
You're full of shit. Yeah. You're saying that.
Exactly. Thank you. Everybody's like, oh, no, I just took it like it's another game. Your first.
No, I mean, it is, you know, it's still 40 minutes, it's still basketball, but, you know, your emotions, when you haven't won, you know, I was so lucky to have, you know, Bodiroga and Fuchka, all these guys with
right.
experience that they kind of win title for me and Juan Carlos, for example.
Of course.
You know, even Juan Carlos, I think he was not that great. I think he was probably better than me because it was not that difficult.
He was a little better than that Final Four.
Yeah,
but.
It was not that difficult to be better than, you know. Yeah.
Guys that I hated back in the day, but they're friends of mine now, like Epi, Chicho Sevilla, you know, rest in peace, and Juan de la Cruz,
yeah.
All these guys, they fought for years in that Barcelona uniform to win a championship, and they never got it. You got it in your third year.
Yeah.
How much did it mean to that team? Because it was like, what, 20 years, I think, up to that point?
I think even the biggest thing about that year is that the football was really struggling. So everybody started turning and following our run.
Right.
And the fact is that, you know, they put a lot of money that year because they knew the Final Four would be in Barcelona. Yeah, it was a lot of pressure. You know, at the same time, the fan support and everything was—it's almost like every basket we score was like a goal in Camp Nou.
Right.
Yeah, so we felt it. But for example, in my case, I didn't quite know how to handle my emotions yet. Mm-hmm. You know, and yes, it was not easy with the sleep at all. I mean, I was just not sleeping, man, at all.
That's so great. I'm so glad. Not that I'm happy that we went through that, but I'm glad to hear somebody just
admit
it. Well,
we won, so I could care less if I was 4-for-25 or something.
Right, of course. In the long run, and that makes it easier to admit it, of course, because you won. But
exactly.
You don't want to tell anybody, like, well, we lost, I didn't play well, and I didn't sleep for 3 days.
No, but it was more than 3 days, too, man. I mean, it was just rough.
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah.
I just thought that I was just so emotional that, you know, every night I would be like, and of course, people are like, well, take something to help you sleep. I'm like, no, because I want to be ready the next day.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be groggy the next day. I need to be ready, you know, every day to practice.
Yeah.
And, so you win that one. Don't ask me why you left Barcelona, but that's for another show, I guess. We'll leave that out of the way. And you go to Tel Aviv. What did you – that was when there was only a top 16, right?
Yeah.
It was top 16 to get right into the Final Four to go in. First of all, let me ask you about that fifth game, or the last game, I should say. I guess it'll be the sixth game.
Sixth game.
In the top 16 against
Žalgiris.
I watched the video the other day. I watched the end of the game. I mean, that's amazing. How did that just go so wrong for...
I don't know. Like I said, you know, everybody talks, oh, it got a little bit of luck. You know, I don't want to really go and talk and believing too much in the luck, but that was one game I always said, I just don't understand how that came about to be the ending.
Like, that was at home.
Yeah, in Tel Aviv.
And to win that game, the Final Four was...
The winner was going to go to...
In the same court.
The winner is going to Final Four in the same
your home
court.
Yeah. And you guys were down 6 or 7?
6 with, yes.
With 20-something seconds left?
To go, yeah.
And the play you made was, ultimately was the play. I mean, you dove the foul of the guy.
Yeah.
I still don't know who you fouled. who missed the two free throws. I can't remember who it is.
Lithuanian guy. Yeah.
And I mean, that's just another, that's never giving up.
I mean, you know, it was not dive. No, I made a basket, and then I just, he was next to me, so I fouled. It was my fifth foul. I came
out. Lunged at him.
I congratulated, you know.
That's the part that got me the most.
The coach, who was national team coach at that time, Sireka. Yeah, I congratulated, and, you know, you sat. You put the towel, you know, on your head. You know, all of a sudden, he misses first. He misses second. All of a sudden, Hanoka Beard steps in too early, right. So you're giving yourself opportunity to take the ball out. All of a sudden, it's 2.2 seconds. You know, okay, you have to go full court, but okay.
Yeah.
But when Derek got that look, I said, oh, this is going in.
You knew it was going
in? Yeah, this is going in. But I never thought the pass will get to.
Right, exactly.
I mean, there's so many stories about that time, believe me. I mean, Gur, who throwing the pass, I mean, he was not seeing great. I mean, he was at that early age, was already with glasses everywhere.
Right.
But he was yelling, Derek, go there, Derek, go there. Like, if you
you saw him.
Yeah,
like
Derek,
people.
Go there. Like, and oh my God.
he threw it like he wasn't American.
Yeah.
I hate to say that, but you know, we Americans grow up throwing a baseball
and passes. Yeah,
you know, a lot of European people, you see him try to throw.
Well, Gur is a great passer.
Yeah, but not so much with that one hand.
Like I said, it had to, in order for that game to be won by Maccabi, it had to happen probably 7 or 8 like things that went on. One of them would immediately take the game away. You know, miss one foul shot, you don't make the pass. Make second foul shot.
Well, just the fact that if he misses the second foul shot, Hanoka Beard doesn't step in the line, the game's over.
Yes.
I mean, it's even more miraculous if you make that three-pointer.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the ball can get deflected and the game's over.
Oh, it was about 2,000 people already left, probably, from Yad Eliyahu and everything.
The thing that gets me the most now that you, since I'm listening to you tell the story about how you lost 3-0 to Zalgiris and went to party with him, and now that you congratulated the coach for their win.
I couldn't even celebrate after the game. I just went straight to Sabas and I was like, you know, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. It was like the only thing that came out from my mouth.
What was he like? Because, I mean, you know, he was dying for that yearly championship.
Yeah, no, I just hugged him. He saw me that it was me. I'm like, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. I don't even know why I said I'm so sorry. But, you know, it was one of those times that you feel so bad, you cannot even celebrate for a moment. So he just looked at me, you know, obviously he's so tall, he just looked at me down, unbelievable. You know, like he was said something like, you know, I cannot believe this. I'm like, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry.
So you apologize.
Yeah, I apologize for I don't know what, for me going to Final Four, I guess. I don't know.
So you get there, and I called you out before, so I got to call you, you know, I got to call you back again. Now you got it. You 18 points in both games, 6 assists in one, 5 in the other, 10 for 10 from the foul line in the semis, 4 for 6 from line and 3. What was, now that you're so open with us about your nervousness in the first one, was there a difference from the experience and the preparation?
You know, in between that Barcelona year, we won with Lithuania European Championships in Sweden. And also there, I mean, for one, like about 1 week, 10 days, I cannot sleep.
Still couldn't sleep.
I cannot sleep during those major championships, you know. But, I mean, I was the MVP of the championships, basically sleeping 2-3 hours a night.
What about now as a coach?
No, I cannot sleep. Sometimes even with the sleeping pills I'm using, you know, just to be honest. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, Tel Aviv nervousness-wise was a little better, but not much.
Not much better.
Not much better. I mean,
at home's got to make you feel a little bit more comfortable.
Well, also Barcelona was at home.
Right. You
know, also Barcelona was at home.
That first game, well, I should say the Cheska game. You guys were up 55-30.
Yeah.
I think. It was the final game. You were 55-30.
Yeah.
You end up winning 118-74. I mean, that's never been done before.
Yeah. 40 points.
Yeah. I think the biggest. I went back and I looked. I think the biggest 44 points and. Only 6 other finals in EuroLeague in these 20 years has been by a margin of more than 10 points. And the biggest one was Real Madrid over Olympiacos, which was 19.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just again, I'm going to go into the fact that you guys go on repeat after that.
Yeah.
But you were so close. I mean, you shouldn't have been there.
Exactly.
So, and this is a historic team, probably what a lot of people say is one of the best teams in Europe. That just goes to show how difficult this game is.
Yes.
Because if you lose that game to Zalgiris,
yeah,
no one ever knows about this Maccabi team.
Exactly.
You guys are just another team.
Exactly.
You're another Maccabi team that didn't make it or lost them, you know, before. How important is it to an organization to be that lucky sometimes?
Like I said, I try to think that I don't believe in that, but sometimes it's just this, just so many circumstances that came about that. Like you said, in Tel Aviv, everybody still talks about that team.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think they will talk about it forever because now there's YouTube.
Of course.
You can always watch it.
I watched it four times yesterday.
Yeah. And when you think about it, I mean, it literally took, because if we don't win that year in Tel Aviv, next year they don't come back with the same budget probably.
Of course not.
They raised the budget because the Final Four was in Tel Aviv. They got some good players and we managed to hit the right personalities together. And so that's what you said. That's what it takes sometimes, you know, some kind of huge events of, you know.
I always say you got to be lucky in life, but you got to be good to be lucky also.
Yeah, you have to give yourself a chance at least to get lucky somewhere, I guess. I don't know, because without a chance, you cannot.
Now, the next year, as you say, you guys raised the budget. Are you consciously going for the repeat?
Yeah. I mean, from day one. That year, we were very confident. That year, CSKA was winning all the games.
Right.
They won all the games through a regular season the Final Four in Moscow. It didn't bother us one bit. It's like when you already done it a couple times, already, and it's not even cocky. It's just really confident in the group that you have together.
Right.
Together with the coaching staff and everything.
Isn't it amazing?
We knew that we could get them.
Yeah, isn't it amazing when you feel that confidence as a team and that nobody's going to get in your way? Yes. It doesn't matter who you face.
Yeah, it's just interesting story about the Final Four. They started in Israel. They came and asked me if they can do a movie about me and they can follow me for like 3 months. And as much as all my sleeping problems are, then I let them in. I let them in. They were following me during the Final Four. They were following me something. They were in my room night before the game talking about the game, what happened. They would leave. They would get out of the room and I would sleep like a baby.
Really?
So, you know, at that point,
so it kind of helped.
Great. Yeah. Kind of helped to relax, but also I was already a different here.
Yeah. You know, well, this is, for you, it's a three-peat.
Exactly.
For everybody else, it's a repeat, but for you, it's a three-peat.
Yeah.
So now you're experienced. Now you got the experience, and of course, that's when you get the MVP.
Yeah.
Stupid question, but I know people want to listen to it and hear your perspective on it. How important is it to win an MVP? Well, I mean, obviously winning the title is always going to be number one.
Again, every person would tell you that, it's not so important because we won, he'd be lying.
That's,
you know,
BS. I'm sorry.
Exactly. You know, it just makes you feel extra good and so on. And we understand the team game. And, I mean, in basketball here, if you don't function with the five guys, it would never happen. And but... Yes. The cherry on the cake.
Yeah, I mean, MVP is always going to be.
Yeah, it's nice.
And I think it's...
It's extra.
Yeah, I think like you said, it could be the cherry on the cake or it could just be something that solidifies all the hard work that you've put in as a player. I mean, and you didn't get lucky.
Yeah.
You didn't get lucky to have a good game then. I mean, you were... It was a slow progression. I could see some people show up at a final and boom, there's...
Explode.
All of a sudden, they score 30 in one game, 20 the next, and they get MVP. Yours was a slow progression.
It was a little different, yes.
Then you go back to the top 16 with, you went to the NBA after that. I'm sorry.
I jumped
a little too far. And the ghost, this is all about EuroLeague, but I want to know about the NBA, what your experience was like. Did you go there with the attitude to conquer and dominate the way you...
No, I came with the idea that exactly what my role would be. I went there as... to be the backup point guard. You know, in some situations it happened, some situations didn't. Obviously that I chose wrong. I chose wrong with the going to Indiana. It was not the team for me at that point.
And you chose that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was a lot of offers, you know. There's a lot of offers, more or less. They were all pretty good, four or five teams. And, you know, pretty much narrowed it in Indy and Cleveland. Mm-hmm. But because in Cleveland was two of my buddies, you know, Ilgauskas and Varejao at that time. LeBron was getting already big, so it would have been interesting. But their contract offer was a little shaky. It was all like incentive driven.
Right.
Some of them likely incentives, how they call it in NBA. Some of them
not. Yeah.
So Yeah, I thought Indy was ready to win. I wasn't ready to go into the team that is
who was there then
on rebuild. I'm sorry.
Who was there then?
Indy.
In Indy, yeah. Who did you play with there?
Steven Jackson, Jermaine O'Neal, Ron Artest,
okay.
Jamal Tinsley, you know.
Oh, so you played during the crazy time.
Exactly. It was the crazy Pacers.
You weren't part of the team in the
no,
the,
I was,
the Detroit.
I know, it was the year before.
It was the year before, yeah.
They all went in Detroit into the stand. Really great guys when you one-on-one with them.
Right.
They were really cool, treating me good, but... Apparently something happened.
Yeah, they got a little bit crazy.
They got a little bit crazy.
You come back to Greece and you come back for, well, who turns into, I don't think he was at this time, but when he coached you, Selko, who became one of your best friends.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, are you godfather to, or is he?
No.
No.
No. But no, you know.
I know his daughter is really close with you and your family also.
Yeah. Anya is a good friend, and Angelico is a good friend now, and, you know, love spending time with them, with the Obradovich family, you know. Yeah, but, you know, the biggest reason why I went to Panathinaikos was him. You
right.
know, at that point, you sort of already over 30 or something like that, and you really have no time for young coaches or for something like shaky situations. And
rebuilding.
Yeah, so when they showed interest, I really wanted to be coach. It was important at that time that coach can really use you well, and it was kind of no-brainer because he really knows how to use his players. And what I found was even more, you know, found great love with, you know, with Panathinaikos and you know, met my wife there.
Right.
And my kids were born in Athens, both.
So, they were both born in Athens.
Yeah, they both born in Athens, yeah. 5 minutes from Oaka, both were born, you know. So, yeah, it was special, you know. But these people really treated me in an amazing way. I mean, you know, 5,000 people at the airport when you came. And I knew then, you know, if you already, you know, I always thought that I'm motivated kind of athlete. You know, I would do whatever it takes to win, to put in the work. But, you know, when 5,000 come greet you in the airport, you know, and start throwing all these bombs under your car, you know.
in a good way.
Yeah, for one moment, I didn't think we were going to escape the airport alive. But yeah, you know, I mean, you have to really try. And
but that makes you feel more responsible and more accountable for
exactly.
I better show up and play good for these
people.
Yeah,
but at that point, I already knew how to handle it. Like
right.
I said, you know, I already had experience, and it was again very nice to start fighting for the titles for the Final Fours, even though the first year we didn't qualify.
Right.
I found a great love in Panathinaikos.
There's not too many people that leave Panathinaikos or Olympiakos that don't say the same thing about each club. You know, each one might have their issues along the way.
Exactly.
But everybody, what was that first Panathinaikos Olympiakos game like?
Again, I was in space. Like you said, I always tell everybody, it doesn't matter what your experience is. My first Panathinaikos Olympiakos, I didn't manage to calm down and play the game.
Before the game, you talk. But
during the game also.
Even during the game.
I had a bad game. I was forcing everything, I remember.
Where was the first one? Was it in Oaka?
I don't want to confuse you. I think it was in Cef. And okay. it was not easy. I remember Kennedy Winston had like 7 3-point shots or something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's one. I mean, I've obviously played in the Barca Madrid games, but I've been
in nothing.
The
like
it's nothing. Your reputation, your parents gave you, is like a kid that never stayed still.
Yeah,
and I didn't see you play that much. I'm gonna be really honest.
Yeah.
I watched a lot of video over the time. I watched you at the end of your career when I came back to Europe, and I fell in love with you right away when you were in Barcelona. But you were never the player that like. Stood still, like your parents said. You know, the ball goes out of bounds and boom. You're like you said before. You know, as a point guard, you're moving everybody. Go over here.
Yeah.
Is that why you and Selko got along so well? Because of your leadership skills on the court?
No, we were not that close when I was playing
for him.
You know, he's a boss and finished. You can tell even when you play for him that he has a great human side. That
right.
When he opens up to you. When we celebrate the titles and after the first two beers or something, everything is a lot lighter and everything. Mm-hmm. And you can tell he has the great human side. But it was still, you know, player-coach relationship. And only when I became, you know, head coach, assistant, we started, you know. Remember one summer we spent some time somewhere else, then a couple weddings, you know, and all of a sudden we, you know, we became a little bit closer where, you know, now it's like a nice friendship, you know.
You have, I'm not going to compare myself to you at all because you're, you know, your game is way above mine, but you have the same personality and character a little bit that I had. I can't imagine that went really well at times with Selke, because Selke and I had our issues. You know, I had 3 years of Selke, which I wanted to, you know, at times I wanted to kill him.
Yeah.
And he wanted to kill me. And we got into it because I always felt like I wanted to be a leader on my team and I wanted to help the rest. Because sometimes he's hard on everybody, not just on, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes I was like, come on, Selke, get off his ass a little bit. Yeah. Would you leave him alone? He's going to play a little bit better. And Selke and I would go at it. But like you said, it was always like, listen, come here. Let's go have a Chivas. Let's get a little Chivas on the rocks, a little whiskey.
Exactly.
Let's sit down and talk this thing out.
Yeah.
And I just talked to one of your players. I'm not going to say his name, but he told me the same thing that I felt about Selke. He was tough. He was difficult, but he was fair.
Yeah.
And as a coach, you can't ask for anything more than that, because to have a coach that's tough and difficult and not be a good person on top of it is the worst thing, I think, for anybody. But you, I see it in you, and I see it, I've lived it in Selke. That's so important nowadays for players, I think, as a
coach. I think you have to be honest with them. You know, you cannot sugarcoat anything, the situation, because it's such a tough business. You know, it's such a tough business. I mean, they got to, you know, especially in Žalgiris, I mean, literally, people are now every year thinking overachieving is normal.
Right, of course. And it's not.
And it's not. I'm very sorry, but it's not. You know, and you're gonna overachieve. Sometimes you're gonna take your blows some years. And
well, the problem is when you overachieve, everybody expects it, and then when you don't, it's more.
They think it's normal.
Well, that's a question I have for you later, but I'll ask you right now. Everybody talks, and I do too. I'm not gonna blame it on everybody else. Everybody talks about budgets and coaching and teams and so forth and so on. And to me, there's a part of me that says yes, that's true. And there's another part that says, no, it's not that true, because the teams with the lower budgets don't have as much expectation as the bigger teams. But like you said, the problem is that one year where you do something that you're not supposed to do, then the expectations, it's a lot easier for your expectations to grow than it is to not grow, you know?
Yeah.
What is easier for a coach? A big budget with 12 personalities that you really become more of a manager of personalities than you do a coach at one point, or a smaller budget like you have in Žalgiris where you can actually coach and focus on that?
Well, I think both sides have their issues. I think the biggest thing for me is that as a person who's really competitive, I think you really want to give yourself a bigger chance of winning the whole thing. And so in that sense, I would have to say it's still better to be with 12 very good players, because it's just, you know, at the same time, we're in the winning business.
Right.
So I think I would take that. I would take that.
You think that's a little bit easier?
Plus, I've already been there as a player. I would like to get there as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that we cannot do it in Žalgiris, and we proved it, that we're fighting for the biggest things in the years that, you know, but there's a lot of things have to happen for Žalgiris to be there because of limitations.
Right, of course. We're just about to finish up here. You had two more shots at the Final Four after that. Well, do you want to get into your knee injury? Was it a big deal for you?
No.
Was that the first time you ever got hurt and didn't play?
No. No, but I mean,
kept you out for a while though, right?
Yeah, but my knee injury happened right like it was happening while we were fighting for Berlin Final Four with Pau. And in Berlin, I was already feeling not great. I had pretty good Final Four. Actually, I had very good Final Four. But the knee was already bothering. Then 1 month later was Greek Championships. I was already issues. So I went directly into the surgery pretty much. No, then it was fine. Then it was fine. Then it was just age. And
right,
I was just getting old, you know.
Father time, like you talked about earlier. So you had the two other Final Fours. And we know that the result of those, you didn't win those, with one with Panathinaikos again, another one with Barcelona. Is it easier to lose that Final Four now that you got four under your belt?
No.
Or did it make you appreciate? Because you really didn't have time to appreciate everything you've done. It
was everything was happening in the span of almost 3 years.
Yeah, and it was all good.
Yeah. Oh.
So you really didn't have a time to sit back and recollect and appreciate on what you did. Did losing the Final Four make you feel that that was more of an important moment of your life than it was, you know, before that loss?
At the end, I was a little bit more mature as a person. It was all about giving yourself a chance to win the Final Four, and you knew how difficult it is to come to that spot. And yes, it was painful, but okay.
When you went into that, because now it's years later, what is it, like 4 years later, you haven't, 4 or 5 years later, I think you haven't won since you won the last one in Panathinaikos. Is there a time where you're thinking like, man, this could be number five? This could be, you know, this like, holy shit, this could be number five, man.
Yeah, well, you know, we went with, yeah, you were thinking. I mean, if you're a team in the Final Four, you already know you can win the whole thing. I mean, even when we went with Žalgiris, you know, to Belgrade, I know, at least I thought that we two good games away from winning the whole thing. And you have some talented players, and some of them can really explode. But, you know, experience is a big key.
You've played and now coached in almost every different format of the EuroLeague, except for the five-game final, which I think was 2000, yes. 2001. I don't want to ask you what the difference is, because, I mean, the three-game playoff was so nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
You know, the three-game playoff was – but what's your favorite format? I think now is the fairest format of all, because everybody gets to play everybody. But,
yeah.
But what was the most exciting one for you that you've played in?
But I like the format where Bologna was playing Vitoria.
The five game.
I liked it. I mean,
most coaches that I talk to go for the playoff thing.
Exactly. Well, you know, coaches want to give themselves, you know,
an opportunity
to fail one time. You know, because right. You know everybody can have one bad game.
Exactly.
EuroLeague loves the Final Four format. You know, it gives them that boom exposure for that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, I like it. I like the new format also. I like playing so many games. I think it's just not compatible with the national competitions, because you end up playing so many games. But, you know, then there's some kind of playoff system. Then there's that boom.
Like, right.
They really won the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know, I think it would be great now with all the teams' improvement with the traveling situations. I think five-game, even seven-game series. Can you imagine two best teams, seven-game series? I mean, that'd be awesome.
As a coach that you guys won an amazing run with Olympiacos. You beat them four times during the year, I think.
Yeah.
It's 3-1 in the finals or in the playoffs. Did you think with the players that you had that you were able to get there? I mean, you said you thought once you were in the Final Four, it was a two-game, you know, if I play two good games, I win. But it's a little different in a playoff series.
See, you have to work, you have to think, like, what is best for your team, for the kind of team you have right now. And the only way, in general, in Žalgiris, we can be successful is go game by game.
Without, right.
You know, some other teams, maybe the players know how to pace themselves. Maybe the coach sometimes even can light up the process of the practices to take you down a little bit, so at the right moment you start peaking again.
Yeah.
We don't have this luxury. I mean,
you got to go every day,
game by game. And like I said, they are asking us to overachieve almost every single day, and it's fine.
Right.
It comes with the territory, but as long as they know that this is what they're asking for, from my opinion.
There's expectations and then there's reality.
Yeah.
Also, both of them.
Sometimes, yes.
You seem like you got a great thing going there. And
oh, we're loving it. Yeah. We're loving it. But, you know, at the same time, like we said, you know, it's result-driven business and people want to see wins. I mean, I can tell them all I want that I believe we're still playing the right way and we're fighting and we're right there with so many changes. I can tell them whatever they want.
It's result-driven.
Yeah, it's a result-driven business.
I had in that Final Four, I had a chance to interview you after the third place game where you guys beat Cheska.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what to say about that, because it seemed to me like you guys celebrated more than when it was Real Madrid that won that year. It seems to me like you guys celebrated more than even Real Madrid did afterwards. And I was coming to third place. It almost felt like more of an Olympic victory than it did a Final Four third place victory, yeah, is what it was essentially. It meant so much to the team, to the players that have never been there before, yeah, to the country, and to you as a coach. It made me see the sport in a different way. I don't know if it did the same thing for other people. It was like, man, sometimes you kind of like go away from the fact that winning isn't everything.
Yeah.
It's most of everything when you're playing it, but it's not everything. Because you guys didn't win, but for you guys, you won your own personal battle.
Well, I think it was an ending to a great story. You know, ending to a great story. We started the season as completely, you know, this green team full of rookies and some guys who were coming back already. And then you building, you constantly see the team build. You know, we had a really good run in December, I believe. Then we kept on going. Then we won even two meaningless games right before the playoffs. So we were really ready for the playoffs. Olympiacos, you know, with Spanoulis, Printezis, and Coach Sferopoulos, you know, that was an amazing team. They were just coming off the finals appearances consecutive, I believe. And they were just excellent. And, you know, for us to see our players just play at the highest level, I mean, Brandon Davis just took off.
It's unbelievable.
You know, became like a superstar of the EuroLeague in that
series. And he left you for Barcelona.
Exactly. Yeah, so yeah, then the Final Four, I think, again, Fenerbahce game, probably these guys went through in semifinal what I went through in Barcelona, without sleeping a couple days. I don't know how much they slept. I mean, they look nervous. They didn't understand how to respond to a contact. And you know, Fenerbahce at that time was right. You know,
you see all this. You actually, as a coach, as a player that's been there so many times, you see it all. Yeah. How do you combat that? How do you, I mean, because only words can't help.
Yeah, no, you know, somehow we managed to make it a game, I believe, in the third. Or
yeah.
We after Kevin hit a three-point shot or something, we came to be tied or something. And ultimately, their experience prevailed. Now, you know, 100%, I understand what they're going through. 100%.
I think you guys took the lead in that game at one point.
Maybe up
by two,
or tie game.
Yeah,
I think it was. I think Kevin he tied it. I think, could be wrong.
It was, to me, it was just amazing the reaction of the team, because no one really sees that, yeah, you know. And that was to me, it was a special moment. I'm fortunate enough to coach. I coach young kids. I speak a lot. I do like team building speeches. Now you know when you stop coaching, maybe they'll have you do that someday. Motivational speeches. By that time, you'll be retired. You won't need the money.
Yeah.
The one thing that I think I admire most about you is one of my favorite words, and one that I always like to use in most of my speeches. And I think it's passion. Passion is what comes out of you in games, when you played. And I don't care. I don't care what people talk about, like you said, about, oh, yeah, well, I work harder than everybody else. I don't care about dedication. Everybody talks about dedication, persistence. You know, you talk about anything. But to me, passion, those are all branches in the passion tree. Okay. You know what I mean? That's how I always see it. What do you feel? I mean, do you feel like most of your drive comes from being passionate about what you do?
Yeah, well, I feel extremely lucky that I found this one thing in life, which is basketball. You know, that I can, you know, this is my life.
Right.
You know, I go there, I work at it, I make a living off of it. That's how I saw the world. That's how I met, you know, great friends and so on. So I feel extremely fortunate, because maybe sometimes people, they don't even find what is their real passion.
Mm.
And for me, it's easy to work. You know, I can be watching video all day preparing for the game. I would go home. I would still watch a basketball game.
Can you do something that you're not passionate about?
I think you can. I think people do, and because they have to survive and they have to make a living and they have to provide for the families. But when you have, you know, passion as your profession, that's you know, you're a very lucky person.
You go a lot further, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Because
yeah,
you give more to it. Talk about passion. One of the things it looks like you've copied from Zeljko Obradović is that pink face sometimes when you go crazy on the
mine
bench.
Is not quite that bad yet.
All right, his is purple. Yours, yeah, is purple. Yours is still red right now. His is a little bit more purple. Is this something that you, is it just you? Is that you being yourself and being passionate, as we're talking about?
Yeah,
or is that something that you might want to control somewhere along the line? Or maybe?
I'm trying to get a little bit calmer. I think I'm not there yet. maybe one day it will come.
But guys both have the ability to blow up and then like kneel down in a timeout for 30 seconds and like literally in a calm way set up a play?
Yeah, well, because we like this 24 hours a day.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm saying like, you know, this is just, for example, who I am. So for me, it's yes, I am like this. I get fired up really quickly. But then you have to, you know, because I'm like this all my life, I have to understand that, okay, it's a job to be done, like you said, just calm a little bit and draw up a play or just think 5 seconds, okay, what you want from that play, and then you draw it up, and it's a job to be done.
If I get crazy like that, I'm not now because I'm 54. If I get crazy like that, I start worrying about my heart a little bit, you know. I don't want to do that, but... Yeah. But if I do, it's hard for me to come down from that and do it. Did Selko, did you learn that from Selko in a way, watching him do it?
No, because, you know, when you think about it as a player also, I was very, like you said, always running around anywhere. And then you feel like, you know, in the moments when it's time to hit a game winner or something, you know, that'll be in your way.
Right.
But it was never really in my way, you know. I mean, I was...
Never as a player.
I was just, you know, able to calm down and try to make the right play.
It's easier to control your destiny as a player than a coach, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
as a coach, you totally depend on the player. As a player, you can just take the ball and decide the game.
That's crazy at that point. You've been interviewed. You haven't been quiet or you haven't been secretive about it at all. So I'm bringing it up. You have some sort of goal or some sort of thought that possibly, and you've interviewed to possibly coach in the NBA.
Yeah.
Do you think you'd have to change that little attitude before you get to the NBA?
We'll cross that bridge when we get there. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. I don't know. At the same time, you have to understand who your players are. In Žalgiris, we are surrounded by young guys who come there to get better and most likely leave for the bigger clubs. So they want to be pushed. They want to be driven. This is the type of players also we look for.
Coach, look at, amazingly, I want to wish you luck because,
thanks.
I mean, you've had all the freaking luck in the world, man.
Yeah,
and you've done everything that any player, any person could do up until this point. But now it's a whole different pot of luck, you know what I mean? Because like you said, now you don't control it as much. It's the players that can control everything. So me personally, I've been dying to do this for over a year. Whenever you want to play golf, I'm in. Just call me because as soon as I get this shield, I'm getting shot up tonight at 8 o'clock. I had to change my appointment for you.
Okay,
but I'm getting shot up. I should be good by the summer by the time the season's done. Hey man, I appreciate it. Best of luck to you.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, my man.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.